Welcome to Season 5 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are further expanding our knowledge by speaking to experts in the fields of physiology, psychology, nutrition, strength and conditioning, and mindset training. We'll be speaking to the coaches and practitioners who do this every day, and to the researchers and academics who are at the forefront of the sciences. Today, we welcome back our good friend, Chef Mario Lima Duran. As you guys will know, Mario is the executive chef at Trifecta Nutrition, one of the largest meal prep companies in the US of A. Chef Mario is also a pivotal driving force behind the UFC Performance Institute and Trifecta partnership, which sees the UFC nutrition team and Chef Mario join forces to offer the UFC fighters one of the top sports performance programs in the entire world in order to assist them making weight during their fight weeks. In this episode, we discuss Fight Island 2.0, as Chef Mario coins it. We go over everything the team learnt from their first experience and how they changed it, as well as what is in store for the future of the UFC and Trifecta relationship. There's a lot of good info here, so let's get to it. All right, green light means we are live, so we are back for yet another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. And again, we see another return guest, one of TFD's very good friends, Chef Mario Lima Duran. Chef Mario, thanks for coming back on, mate.
Let's get it. Super happy to be back. Super happy to be back in the show.
Is this our third episode? Is this our third one?
Yeah, this is the third one, man. I think every time we're getting better and better at them.
Yeah, you've joined the elitist group. There's only your number three. Third person to come on three times to the podcast. What a good time, hey? But Chef Mario, the reason I've got you back on, Fight Island Part 2 just finished up. You've been back for a little bit now. It finished up a couple of weeks ago. I wanted to give you a bit of time to rest and relax before I invite you to back on. But Fight Island Part 2.
Well, yeah, Fight Island 2.0, man. What an adventure. You actually got to experience it this time around, huh?
Yeah, how cool was it? It was, you know what, after speaking to you and kind of obviously I had athletes down on that first one, I kind of had an idea of it. And I'm sure we'll get into it, but it's more like you can't really prepare for it, what to expect. And then when you get there, I don't know, it's probably a bit different for you going back your second time. But for me, it was definitely exceeded my expectations in many different ways. And just the whole process of it, you know, just getting over there, especially from Australia, getting the flight over, then doing the quarantine period and just how they set up the hotel with the COVID staff. And then obviously the program you guys are running was just phenomenal. But yeah, it was crazy. Let's get into it. Like, let's talk about, firstly, Fight Island 2.0, let's call it. How did you find it? How did you find it compared to the first time around?
So, you know, when you say it exceeded your expectations, I'm thinking it's a good thing.
Definitely.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, it's a bubble in the best of sense. You know, it's the UFC did an insane job at setting this bubble with the UAE and making sure that everybody was protected, that nobody who potentially had COVID was exposed to anybody else that could, you know, spread COVID all around. Testing was mandatory, and you know, it was kind of like going back in time, pre-COVID time, where we were in a space and an environment where we could operate for the benefit of the athletes in a way that was very much so normalized. So everybody was tested twice a week. Everybody knew that they were negative, and if there was for some reason a spike in a positive, they were taken out of, you know, the equation really quickly. But it was from a human standpoint, from, you know, not talking really, not mentioning the UFC, it was very much a psychological break from all the lockdowns and everything else, because we could go to restaurants and we could go to the bar and have a drink and not have to wear the masks, and we knew we were going to be fine, you know. So in that aspect, and to your point, you know, going above and beyond and being very surprised about the hotel and the accommodations and just being at the W, like the W did such an excellent job at tending to the athletes' needs, tending to the staff needs. So compared, you know, compared to Fight Island 1, Fight Island 2 was night and day. You know, we were, to give you, this is a perfect example that I give people. For Fight Island 1, we had 3 calls with the culinary staff, and we had, I think, an essay of emails that just never stopped, just to set expectations, to make sure that the food was taken care of, to talk about the menu. And, you know, if anybody listening out there hasn't listened to our second episode or the first Fight Island episode, definitely go check that out. But this time around, it was two Zoom calls and one email, and the entire thing took care of itself. So I think we already knew what we were going for. And not only from the UFC PI trifecta standpoint, but overall operations of the UFC and PR and all these other facets that are very much a part of Fight Week, everybody agreed that this time around, there was so much less stress and it was so much more smoother in many ways.
Yeah. And I think you could feel that, especially when I was there. It seemed like it was almost a very well-oiled machine, and just everything seemed to just flow, and it was so unambiguous, and things just seemed to happen really well. Mario, what were the major things? So say when you finished Fight Island 1, you guys obviously got together, you had a debrief. What were kind of the big things that you said, okay, when we come in this and we do this a second time, these are the things that we've got to fix or make better?
Yeah, great question. So there's a main difference between Fight Island 1 and Fight Island 2, right? And that's that there were no overlapping events. So in Fight Island 1, you had one event that was happening on a Wednesday, and then the following event happening on a Friday, and then the following event happening on a Saturday, and the following event happening on the next Saturday. So there was a lot of overlaps, which created a lot of stress and a lot of athletes in-house. So we were going above and beyond a little bit too much on the first Fight Island. And when we spoke with the UFC Performance Institute, we debriefed everything also with the team here at Trifecta. We said, well, you know what? Now that we understand the hotel operations, and now that we understand how they can support us better, what if we make the job of the chefs at Trifecta less, and we just tell the hotel that the athletes are going to go eat at this time? So we pretty much relied a lot more on the hotel. The hotel also understood and knew what the population of athletes and teams wanted. So they actually redid the hotel's, the menus of the different restaurants that they had within the hotel. So one of them was a fried rice station. The other one was a pasta station. Apparently they sold so much fried rice the first time around that they were like, well, this makes sense. Like, athletes will need carbohydrates post weigh-in. So this makes sense. And when we spoke with them, it was kind of like, okay, perfect. We're going to stop feeding them at this time around, and they'll go over there and do their thing and eat with the hotel. And that made our job tons easier. Also, assessing whether an athlete really needed our support or not. If an athlete was there a little bit earlier, we were also able to support them earlier if they needed to decrease in weight substantially. And if we were feeding a heavyweight, for example, there was no need to feed the heavyweight using our system, because they could just go eat in the hotel, and we knew that they were well taken care of. So, you know, we could easily really learned how to make the job that much smoother and work together. And we were able to support not only ourselves to make the job easier, but support the experience of the athlete in a much better way.
Yeah, definitely. And the last time we spoke, you said there were quite a few logistical issues. Like you said, there was a lot of email chains, and, you know, this person had to email this person, who had to email that person, and it just went times and times over, and it was a very difficult system. Logistically, how did everything work when, you know, sourcing the food, sourcing, say, the supplements you guys needed, all of that? How did you guys reconcile the issues you found the first time around for the second time?
Yeah, great question again. When you're going to a new environment or a new place, you can plan the best you can, but then you know that certain things are going to fall through the cracks. And in the case of Fight Island 1, many things fell through many cracks all the time. So it was kind of like constant problem solving, constant like figuring things out. But because we already had the contacts of people, because we already had the interactions, because we already had gone through the motions this time around, it was so much easier to just problem solve. Even communicating with the hotel, when is the Thorne supplement order coming in, what's happening there? You know, they contacted the chef, and then the chef contacted Charles, and then Charles contacted whoever needed to be contacted to make sure that that was coming in without any hiccups. Sourcing the food also was very, very smooth. We had a specific person from the hotel assigned to us that was supporting us in putting in the orders. And we understood the system and we understood when the butcher needed the order so that we could get all the protein done, so on and so forth. So there was an understanding of the systems, whereas beforehand, it was just kind of like, all right, we're here, we planned, and let's see what happens, you know? And it was just like this constant struggle, zigzagging to make sure that the athletes didn't necessarily feel it, but that we can actually continue and operate Fight Island 1.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So let's talk about the process. When the guys got in, they obviously went into the 2-day quarantine and then they went straight into their fight week. So what did you guys learn from, you know, them getting in from the first time around, going into quarantine, dealing with their food, and then moving out into that period? Okay, we've got to make weight and do these acute weight loss and adjust all their food for that. What were the big learnings that you implemented the second time around with that process?
Yeah, so the biggest lesson was having the dietitians of the USC Performance Institute reach out to the athletes early so that they can be onboarded, so that we could have the information on where they were and their weights, so that we can get out of quarantine ASAP and start cooking the food and make sure that we have the most accurate information to support them in their weight decrease. We also had the hotel. So as I told you, the first time around, we worked directly with a W hotel and we came up with a fighter quarantine menu. So apparently the first time around, we were a little too aggressive on the restrictions of food. So this time around, we actually asked the hotel, hey, can you give the athletes specific carbohydrates? Can you give them more bread? Can you give them more potato puree? Can you give them more rice, whatever the case may be? And let's put them on this side so that if the athlete is actually heavy, they will know not to eat it so that they can begin their weight decrease journey earlier on. And so we were a little more lenient on our restrictions. We also opened up the menu a little bit more so that it can satisfy many palates and many restrictions. Like the first time around, they didn't even think about it. We didn't have a vegan option or a pescatarian option. This time around, we did have that. We knew that we would need the support from the hotel as well in preparing the food before getting out of quarantine, because quarantine was actually a little bit longer than the first time around. And this time we didn't have anybody going earlier. Last time I went earlier, and then Trifecta's executive sous chef, Chef Skyler, went in later on. So I took care of doing all the prep. But this time around, we asked the hotel, hey, can you guys help us? Can you guys support us? And they graciously did so, you know, because it was, the menu was very similar. So they knew exactly what they had to prepare. So there were a lot of those, like I mentioned, cohesive environments where we just supported each other and made it work a lot easier.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because last time we spoke, that was Chef Skylar's first trip out there. And was that the first time you guys worked together? Chef Skylar came on there, or she came on for a few other shows previously, hey?
Yeah, we had her training in Vegas for 4 weeks prior to Fight Island 1.
Yeah. What was the difference having Chef Skylar out? And I saw her in there and she was quite the machine. I don't know if that's quite the term to use, but
oh,
she
no,
was
that
just
is quite, that's the
working away and just absolutely blasted it out. And when I came back to see you guys in the kitchen, that's what blew my mind. It was like, holy smokes, the volume of food you guys are producing, but you're still maintaining that quality. I was a bit like, I don't know how that happened. I don't know how you guys do that. What was the difference having Chef Skylar there to support you this time around?
Yeah, so the inclusion of a second chef is really the effort in making the program sustainable in the long term, right? And not only for the UFC and Trifecta, not only for that partnership, but also for myself and for Skylar, you know? One person can only do so much. And I'll speak very candidly. I didn't make the job easy for myself. I really wanted to provide a world-class, and that's what we look at providing with the UFCPI and the Trifecta partnership, a world-class service where we're not only providing the nutritional aspect of things, but we're actually providing a good experience when it comes to the culinary thing set of things. And so with Skylar and having a second set of hands, I say this to her, like bringing you in was kind of like bringing one and a half people in, because she's that fast and she's that effective and efficient at doing the job. And not only in that aspect. So, you know, the first time around, we were working 18 to 22 hour days. And that's not joking. Like, we were working that much with one person. But with two, we were working at any given day 8 hours. And so the contrast of being rested, of being able to go to the gym, of being able to have dinner with the team, of being able to read a book at night and be well rested the next day, it's night and day. And that affects directly how we're plating the food. So we were able to get much more creative. We were able to take the time to make the food prettier, put garnishes, so on and so forth. So that is the benefit, to answer your question, of having a second chef. Not only a second chef that knows what she's doing, but, you know, she's culinary nutrition trained, much more like I am. And so we work very well. In kitchens, you can have a relationship where you butt heads with somebody and you just, for some reason, don't get along. I've had many of those. Or you can have a very beautiful, like, clockwork relationship where you're just trucking along and you're making the best out of it. And fortunately, that's what we found in Skylar. She's been an insane, great addition to the team.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, and I've seen you do that. I've seen you do that in 5 weeks before, where you're pulling those ridiculous 18 to 22 hour days. But that's amazing. So you can bring that back down to 8 hours. Now, Chef Mario, you guys aren't exactly getting days off during all of this, like, albeit that maybe there's a little bit of time when it's the actual fight day and before the guys come in, you guys have a bit of time to relax. But you're pretty much working 7 days a week the whole time you're over there, right?
Yeah, I mean, with Skylar, with two chefs, it was really 6.5. So really, with two chefs, it was a lot more sustainable. We could actually go to the beach because there was a beach area within the bubble in Abu Dhabi. And, you know, the Saturday or the Sunday, and we could go in a Monday and just knock out prep. And then Saturday and Sunday, we would go in for like 2 or 3 hours. And it wasn't that bad. You would either go at the beginning of the day or at the end of the day. So yes. And, you know, this might sound kind of crazy to people, but that's okay with me. Like, it's part of the culinary journey, part of being a chef and being in the culinary industry, is that you're there to serve and we're there to work. And granted, there needs to be a balance. And I think that's what having two chefs on the road has brought. But yeah, we were able to get a lot more rest this time around than before.
So talk us through, what's the average day then for you and Chef Skylar when you're there? Let's just say, I don't know, it's a Tuesday, it's the first day of fight week. Can you talk us through, even if you talk us through, say, the onboarding process that they'll go through with the UFC PI team, how that information is then passed on to you guys, and then what's the process that turns that into food on the plate that you're giving the athletes?
Yeah, so it's a specific process where the dietitians speak to the athlete. They do a full assessment of where they're at, where they need to be, what their preference and the weight decrease method is, what their dietary preferences are, if there's any food restrictions, if there's any religious preferences. And then that is put on this sheet that is called a kitchen order form. And the kitchen order form is typically sent emailed to us around 2 p.m. So we go in, let's say on a Tuesday, to follow your example, around 10 or 11 a.m. And on Monday, we do a lot of our prep. Monday, we always prepare the entire week. So if there's anything else that we need to prepare that we didn't get to on Monday, then we go in on Tuesday and we do that. And we get the kitchen order form. And then we have these labels, these co-branded labels that say Trifecta UFC, Trifecta Nutrition and UFC Performance Institute. And then there's a little box for the name. And then there's boxes for the serving sizes of the specific macronutrients. So the kitchen order form is organized where every single athlete gets their own kind of box. And within that box, you have breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks. And the nutrition pretty much is translated from grams to servings. We use the exchange system, which is the diabetic exchange system that was started to help diabetics control their blood sugar levels. And that's been really adopted within the sports world. And so we use a diabetic exchange system, which equates to a specific serving size for a specific macronutrient. For example, 2 ounces of protein is, a serving of two proteins is equivalent to 4 ounces, and 4 ounces, 2 grams, I'm Googling this real quick, is 113 grams. So if in the serving size, there's a 2 for protein, we know that it's 4 ounces or 113 grams of protein. And then let's say we're talking about somebody who doesn't need to lose a lot of weight, then there's a 1 carbohydrate. So a carbohydrate can be, is anything that's equivalent to 15 grams. That's the serving size that's been established in the exchange system. And that varies per actual food. So a serving that would equate 15 grams of sweet potatoes is 1/2 cup, whereas brown rice is 1/3 cup, whereas quinoa can be anything between 1/3 cup and 1/4 cup. Sweet potato mash would be also 1/2 cup. And so we use that system to make sure that we're plating the food 100% personalized to the athlete's needs. So we make out those labels, to go back to the example, and we do that for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We stack those labels, and then Skylar, let's say, takes care of breakfast and I take care of lunch, and then we come together and we take care of dinner together. So we plate everything all at once, personalizing every single athlete's meal to their specific needs. It's the same menu. Of course, athletes are not going to share what they're eating, or maybe they will, but it makes it a lot easier in us. But what's different is how much food is actually going on the plate. And so we use different sauces for breakfast, lunch, dinner. We use different proteins as well, so that we can provide that experience I was talking about earlier in the podcast of something that is palatable and that is, approachable and that it doesn't burn out the athlete by the end of the week. We really, really, really tap into that human factor in the athlete, and we like to provide as much variety as possible so that the athlete is happy at the end of the week.
Hey guys, a quick interruption of the podcast to give you a heads up on my newest project, TrainAid. In elite level performance, we often talk about the importance of the one percenters, and it is because of these one percenters that I created TrainAid Hydration. TrainAid Hydration is an oral rehydration supplement formulated to replace essential electrolytes lost in sweat while promoting rapid rehydration. This is a problem that I've seen in amateurs right up to UFC world champions. And in the game of one percenters, TrainAid Hydration allows you to get the most out of yourself by being optimally hydrated before, during, and after your training sessions. If you want to learn more, then follow TrainAid on Instagram and TrainAid Performance on Facebook. That's TrainAide. All right, let's get back to the podcast.
Yeah, and that's something you guys do really well, is provide that variety, because anyone that's, gone through that process and you've put yourself through, say, like a fight week plan, when you're eating a lot of the food looks like, chicken and avocado or very bland things like that. But you guys, one, it's very impressive that you guys had that base and you had all these other options, but it seems every fight week you're continually developing these. You've got new snacks, you've got new sources. How's that come along, and how has that naturally progressed that you've got this huge variety of options that you can offer these athletes?
Yeah. So, I think that as humans, just like the athletes, the UFC athletes don't want to eat the same thing over and over again. And this may be very selfish, which I acknowledge with a lot of pride, but me as a chef don't want to cook the same thing over and over again, right? Maybe a new experience for Izzy or for Alex Volkanovski or for whoever, because they've never tried that sauce, but I've cooked that like 10 times for other people, And so it's both the desire to continuously evolve this program and continuously looking at making this a world-class program, but also it's a very sort of chef-driven desire to not get stuck and always develop and always evolve as a professional. And so how the development of sauces happen is one time I was in Miami and it was like last Christmas and we were out in Little Havana and I was drinking a mojito. And I was like, oh, an avocado lime mint sauce would be fucking incredible. I'm sorry, I cussed. I don't know if it's okay to cuss. But that was my mind. So I put on my notes. And then we're in fight in a fight week, and Chef Sky comes and she's like, hey, try this, like this beautiful nut based parsley tabbouleh. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's absolutely delicious. Let's actually include that. Then we go into our data food system data analysis system. It's called ESHA. And we actually analyze every single recipe, and we make sure that it's a high-fat sauce that's meeting the nutritional requirements established by the UFC Performance Institute. So the creative aspect comes in first, and then we look at it in a nutritional aspect, make sure that it's being the guidelines, the nutritional guidelines that we've been given, and we just implement it on the menu, and we have this beautiful recipe book that we've been developing since the beginning, the conception of the program. It just continues to grow and grow and grow.
Yeah, quite literally like changing the game, because it is, like we said at the start, so many athletes are just content with chicken and avocado. And now I feel like they've been exposed to this type of thing. The bar has just been raised, and every time it's just keep getting raised. And all of a sudden it's not unusual to expect these crazy sauces and these crazy meals and everything else. The athletes themselves, it's a weird time to be ready and getting ready for all of this. And yeah, they might be a bit heavier coming in, or they might be facing complications. Were there anything that you guys realized during Fight Island 1 when the athletes were coming in and maybe they were unexpectedly heavy and you had to make adaptations to the program to suit that? Was there anything like that that was happening that you catered for the second time around, knowing that athletes were coming out of this strange COVID time and you had to make suit?
Yes, I think we were taking care of that with the athlete quarantine menu. That's where that was like our safety net, where we really tackled, you know, somebody may have gotten off the plane and they were eating all the bread that the plane was giving them and all the delicious chocolate dessert that they were giving us, you know, and like, I can't blame them, but at the same time, buddy, you just made your wake up that much harder, you know? We really prepare the gut and the body and the fighter quarantine menu, where again, it was a menu that was developed in conjunction with the W team, and it was really looking at the health of the athlete and the benefit of the athlete. And then on the menu side, we actually, the first time around, we developed a sauce that had a lot of tryptophan. So we looked at natural foods that were naturally high in tryptophan. And Chef Skyler came up with this incredible pepita mole, green mole. It was pepita pistachio green mole. And it's like super high in fat, super delicious. And we were giving the athletes that for dinner so that they can eat it whenever they needed to go to sleep. We never really made a big stink about it. We really didn't tell people about it. But it was a very, again, functional and intentional approach to the food, which is the basis of the philosophy of Trifecta and what we've done in the culinary nutrition side. But those were the little details that we did to help the athlete in helping mitigate some of those issues that you mentioned.
Yeah, and I guess that's a good segue into this next section. And something that I realized when we got to Fight On, and I've spoken to this about this with a few people, is that I've never had so many conversations about sleep than when I was on Fight Island, you know, optimizing the sleep, getting into a good sleep cycle. How do we get these guys into a sleep cycle that's going to line up with their fight time? Is their nutrition going to be affected by this strange sleep time? These are all things that we were talking about. I've never, ever had so many conversations about sleep. What was it like on your end? What did you, one, find that first time when the guys are on that schedule, and what were you adjusting for this time around?
That's a great question. And I'll give another example of one of your earlier questions as to, you asked what else did we implement that was different from the first Fight Island to the second Fight Island. And a lot of it had to do with sleep, right? There was a heavy use of melatonin for sure. Shout out to Thorne for that. But it was kind of crazy to try to help athletes readjust their bodies because they were going to get punched in the face at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's kind of nuts to even say it, but athletes had to sleep during the day and train at night so that the bodies could naturally adjust to when their actual fight time was. And so we really adjusted how we deliver the food. And so we had the hotel support us in having athletes call in-room dining. And we had a specific list of athletes that we would know that they were going to call in-room dining so that we didn't have to stay awake until like 3 o'clock in the morning and have these ridiculous hours. And so that really helped us navigate the different needs for different people. And as far as, you know, supporting them with readjusting to the sleep, it was very much so done by the dietitians. I can't say that we had a lot of say on that. So I don't know. Let me, you know, shoot that question back to you. Like, what was your experience in doing so? Like, what were some of your tricks that you did to help your athletes readjust to that?
Melatonin was a big one, that was for sure. We had a very set sleep cycle. So obviously we had wide variety of guys fighting. So we had Shane fighting, I think at 2 a.m., 2 or 3 a.m. and then Israel wasn't fighting till 8 a.m. But they all obviously had the aura rings, and you know, we can debate back and forth about the effectiveness. But I generally think that the sleep cycle data that the aura rings give is pretty good. And that was, yeah, that was what we were using, right? And we were making sure that the guys, okay, you black out the room, no blue light, following all of that. We did a lot of work with coaches around breathing. You know, say what you want about all of that for performance and whatever. The main reason we were using that was to flip into that parasympathetic state and get into a point where they're relaxing, because it's very strange to be wanting to go to bed at 4 p.m. or getting your body ready to go to bed at 4 p.m. And then we wanted them to sleep until, say, midnight or so. And we didn't want to be getting them up and say, hey, wake up at midnight, and then we're going to go walk, just waltz straight into the training room at 12:30, because you don't do that for a fight. Like, if you're fighting at 7 p.m. at night, you wake up, you hang around, you eat, you move your body, you let your body warm up and get ready. So that's what we were doing. And I guess it was those first initial days in quarantine that we found that were really interesting, and trying to get that. We were lucky that the guys are in Vegas and that was a time zone difference, but we could sort of set it over there and start the process a bit earlier. But one thing that you said there that really helped, and it was a big worry of mine, was, okay, what about access to food? If we're going to bed at say 4 p.m. and then we're up at 12, we're eating breakfast at 2, 3 a.m. And it's like, okay, we've got to get this guy's gut used to it. You know, you can have a whole discussion about chrononutrition and is that going to affect this acute weight loss strategy? But it's like, we need to get that guy food in because he's going to be eating before the fight. But then I need him getting this food in to support these acute weight loss strategies. And then after that, you know, he wakes up, eats, trains, and then relaxes for a bit, and it's ready for his next meal. And it's 4 a.m. So it's like, we've got to have access to the food. So I think having the 24/7 offering, like you guys preparing all the food the day before, it being there, and all we had to do was dial zero on the phone and say, hey, we're ready for our food. That was a game changer, because that was a real worry. It was like, oh, smokes, like, are we going to have to wait? Or are we going to have to store this somewhere? But yeah, that really helped from my end as well.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. That's awesome to hear. I know that that the PI really supported with, you know, any sort of supplements to support that sleep cycling. So I'm glad we worked together as a team to make that happen.
Yeah, it was really good. It was such a cool experience. I guess, Murray, let's dive a bit more. I want to talk a bit more generally about the hotel and the whole experience itself, because that was a big, like, question, I suppose, a lot of people have. And Fight On, like, what exactly is Fight On and what's actually there? Can you just describe and give us a brief rundown? Like, what is in the hotel? What are the things you can do? What's there to eat? What can you guys can do? What can't you do? Like, what activities there? Can you give us a rundown of it?
Yeah, so Fight Island is Yas Island that is located in Abu Dhabi. So it's a sort of, it's an island, but I believe it's a man-made island. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. Do you know if that's a factor?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is a man-made island.
So it's, you know, like anything in Abu Dhabi, they got a lot of money and they can do whatever the heck they want. So they created this island called Yas Island. And that's where the Ferrari world and where the Formula One of Abu Dhabi is located at. And they made a, I think it was a 25-mile radius bubble. And so they locked down this entire section of the island. And there were, I believe, 4 to 5 hotels. And the main one where most of the UFC executives and most of the main UFC staff, where we were staying and where all the athletes were staying, was a W Hotel. It's this hotel owned by the Marriott family, and it's one of their higher brand hotels. So there were a lot of activities to do within the hotel. They were very much so ready for us. They pretty much closed the entire thing just for us. So, you know, it was all UFC and UFC related people and that were staying there. And so there was, within the WL state, where I'll stay, start there, there was a pool, there were two bars, there were two pools, three restaurants, and then the hotel had various different activities for us to do throughout the 5 weeks. There was a lot of variety on the menu so that he could eat. There was like classes on how to make dim sum. There was sushi night. So it was quite fun to be there. It was very entertaining, and it kind of became like home. There was a very expensive coffee shop too. By the way, I tried the coffee. Thank you for bringing it. It was absolutely delicious. Shout out to Jordy for that. And then outside of the hotel, there was, you could rent bikes and you could bike around the closed bubble, the closed streets. And then you could go to other hotels. So other hotels like the Crown Plaza or the Rotana, they have different restaurants in there. So you can actually go there and go to the bar or go to the restaurant. So you're not necessarily stuck in your own hotel all the time. You're stuck within the bubble, but not within your own hotel. There was also a access in Fight Island 2, this is strictly talking Fight Island 2, to the beach. So we could actually go to the beach and hang out around there. There was a pool there. There was, you can order food, and there was another bar as well. In Fight Island 1, the Formula 1 Speedway was open to the UFC too, but this time around it was not part of a bubble. So, and of course there was a Forum Arena, which is where all the fights were happening. So that's what we were limited to. It was a little piece of heaven on earth, and like I said, it was kind of like going back to pre-COVID eras, because you could actually walk around and know that you didn't necessarily need to wear a mask, even though we all wore masks and we were all responsible. That's what Fight Island was. It was this closed off place just for the UFC and all the people working in the hotels. It was pretty incredible.
Yeah, incredible. Hey, that's a good word to describe it, because once you were there, I remember particularly at one stage, me and the camera guy for the CKB team, we were at the beach and we're kind of overlooking, and the sun like was going down, and it's the first time we said, hey, this is the first little taste of normality in the last, probably that year, And it was like, isn't this crazy that the UFC has been able to pull this off and make this such a great experience for not only the fighters, but the teams and the staff and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Dana for actually even envisioning this and having a team behind him that actually supports, his crazy vision and made it work, crazy in the best of sense. But yeah, dude, it's also beautiful for the MMA world, for the sport in itself. I think just because the UFC was able to pull this off, it's really, I think 2020 was very healthy for the MMA, for MMA as a sport. I think it's really brought it up to the very beginning of what pop culture is, much like many other sports are in. The amount of talk behind Fight Island and the amount of conversations I saw were absolutely crazy. So I think it was really good overall for the sport.
Yeah, I think it kind of threw it in the mix with those other, more mainstream sports, especially over in the US, like the basketball, the hockey, the baseball, things like that, because it was kind of like, hey, we're doing this and everyone in the world isn't doing this, and everyone look at us and pay attention, and everyone kind of did pay attention, didn't they?
Yep. And even within the basketball, like in Orlando, the bubble was burst multiple times, and there were like COVID cases spiking, and even though they were getting tested every single day, it wasn't as controlled as it was with what we had in Abu Dhabi. So it was pretty impressive, and it was profitable too for the UFC. If you look at boxing wasn't really getting any views, and to be completely honest, like the finals or the playoffs of basketball weren't as loud as what other years have been here in the United States. So it's been an interesting contrast in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Mario, the last time we spoke, I remember you saying something, don't quote me directly because I won't get it right, but you said when you were leaving Fight Island 1, you said, if I can survive that, like I can do anything, and I can do anything within that program. You obviously came back, you took all the learnings from Fight Island 1, took it to 2.0, and you kind of ramped up the program. What did you think, or what were the major learnings that you got, or what was the major thing that you got out of Fight Island 2.0 that you're going to take into future programs?
It was interesting because I was talking to Skylar, and like when we were actually able to sit down and have a conversation, which wasn't for a couple of weeks, and talk about our experience, you know, she felt the same way too. Like, wow, I was able, because she did it the last 2 weeks by herself. Like, this girl's a monster. Like, I respect her so much, not only even before that, but the fact that she said yes to the opportunity, did not complain, was absolutely exhausted, but pulled it off. Like, I think we both felt the same way in the sense of, wow, this was a monster. We were able to do it. Just two people feeding the entire UFC roster, you know, kind of incredible in that sense. For Fight Island 2, I think there was so much more of a maturity aspect when it came to the professionalism. It was kind of like, on a personal note, I conquer that. And then we just kind of cruised up there, you know. I'm actually excited to, if a third Fight Island happens, I'm excited to go back. But I can't really say, Jordy, that I have a massive lesson from Fight Island 2. I think it just really established that what we've created with the UFC Performance Institute and Trifecta is really something that's world class. I guess what I keep saying is, tell me of another chef, and this is not humble at all, but tell me of another chef who traveled twice during a pandemic internationally and was able to cook for one of the most popular sports of 2020. And aside from Chef Skylar, I don't think you can name anybody else. So I feel incredibly blessed. I think there's just nothing but gratitude and blessings that came from Fight Island 2, to have been able to lead the culinary aspect, the culinary nutrition aspect of things for Fight Island.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Chef Mario, last thing that I want to ask you before I let you get back, where do you see the program going now? I kind of feel like every time I chat to you or every time I see this program that you guys are developing, it's like it goes up and it goes up and it goes up. It's like, okay, well, how high can you guys possibly take it? And then I think, oh, surely it can't get any better. Surely you can't do it. And it always seems to happen. Where do you see it going? Where do you see this happening? What's the future hold for the Trifecta UFC-PI relationship?
Yeah, for sure. So we're going into the third year. So 2021, we're exploring supporting the program at full capacity. So the vision has always been to do that. And so we would be hiring potentially 4 to 6 new chefs, and we would be splitting the time in traveling and being able to support the year-long season that the UFC is, so that every single fight, no matter whether it's a pay-per-view or a UFC plus or ESPN plus event, is supported. You know, UFC Fight Night is supported. So that's always been the vision, and we are making giant steps in making that happen. All of the recipes that we've developed are also being redone and finalized. So there's always the desire to create a food book or a recipe book that is part of the partnership, and that we're able to put it out to the world so that we can help the MMA community become a much more healthy and culinary driven environment. So that information might go out next year or maybe 2022. You know, the vision is always massive. So within, like, I feel like what we've been doing with the UFC has been this massive case study that's been insanely, it's kind of like we're doing a PhD that's been very successful. And so, you know, we're looking at making that success bigger and applying it to the entire UFC, as I just mentioned, but also within Trifecta. The exciting part is that now we can say, hey, we've developed this for the UFC. Now let's go into football. Now let's go into soccer. Now let's go into whatever other sports leagues, you know, and within Trifecta, we can start thinking about being that culinary nutrition and thought leaders where we can support multiple sports leagues with their culinary nutrition services. So It's not only with the UFC, but the vision is much, much larger. And how can we create a system that can be replicable in multiple other sports leagues and support them with their own personal needs? You know, at the end of the day, MMA is the most restrictive sport out there. So if we can do it here, we can definitely do something similar for other sports. So that's a vision. A lot of things on the works, and you know, nothing set in stone, but that's where we're heading.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like, it, considering what you've been able to do within the confines of athletes who have to probably do the most dramatic weight manipulation out of all the sports in the entire world, imagine what you could do when that isn't a factor and you can actually feed these guys for performance and give them really good food all year round.
Yep. Imagine feeding a linebacker with no restrictions whatsoever. Like, oh my God, the food that we could put out. So yeah,
absolutely.
You know, those are considerations. All right.
Chef Mario Lima Duran, always a pleasure to talk to you, mate. Just lastly, before we always talk about it, but you obviously have your own brand, Chef Maz. Gets out there, goes on YouTube, really good Instagram. You've been putting out a lot of really good tutorials and really great content, and I highly encourage everyone to check it out. And if people do want to check it out, they do want to follow you, they want to follow you on socials, they want to chat to you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, at Chef Mario everywhere. You'll see a cartoon rendering of me. If it's not at Chef Mario alone, it's at Chef Mario _, just an underscore, so you can follow me on Instagram. On Facebook, it's at Chef Maz. On YouTube, it's Chronicles of a Cook, or just Mario Lima Duran, my name. And TikTok as well. And you know, I'll be putting up a lot of content that is educational in the aspect of cooking. That's my main focus right now. So if you're looking at becoming a better cook, or at looking at behind the scenes on how Jordy and I have fun on the road, definitely check those out.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Chef Mario, always a pleasure, mate, and no doubt we'll get you on to do it again when Fight Island 3 rolls around.
Yeah, it's looking forward to it, and thank you so much for having me again.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Chef Mario continues to lead the way in providing one of the highest quality sports performance programs for elite level athletes in the world. Be sure to follow him on his socials to stay up to date with his work. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.